So, I'm Jamie Stallman, and today we're talking about topics in environmental ethics, and especially population consumption, as they intersect with some of Bonhoeffer's theologies of community. To get started, if you were here yesterday, we're going to do another spectrum exercise. And a spectrum exercise is, I'm going to read a few paragraphs from different schools of thought, and we're actually going to get up and move around and discuss why and where you sit on the spectrum. And it's going to kind of shake out how we think about different environmental issues. And then we're going to get into this population and consumption case. And no worries if you didn't read it. We're going to go over it briefly, and then we're going to do what's called a power structure and talk about the implicit sources of the decisions that you have to make. So, that's everybody get up. So one side is going to be over here, and the other side is going to be all the way over the door. So if you agree with me, come on over here, and if you don't agree with me, move
as far away as you disagree.
Do we, right now, we can be anywhere in between?
Correct, and so that it's a spectrum. So yeah, it's supposed to kind of say if you
are asleep.
If you,
I'm with you in spirit.
If you agree with me, or at what I'm saying, then you come to the degree that you agree with me.
Okay.
If you're just like, that sounds exactly like me, then you'd be standing kind of where I am. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, then you just move on over.
So should we all start in agreement before?
Oh, I forgot that. Oh yeah, I don't know. I just move all day.
I just want to make sure you didn't like that
you.
Because you thought you
yeah, no,
might not be standing for long.
Okay. So we're going to do another spectrum exercise.
Great.
So if you agree with me, come over here to the degree that you agree with me. And then
so it's a continuum.
It's a continuum, exactly. Okay. So to kind of, we have a little bit larger group than yesterday, so we're actually going to maybe do a door-to-door to actually kind of see that we shake out into a kind of a spectrum. So let's face it, the world is a mess. It seems the more we try to solve things, the more we mess things up. What we need is a completely different understanding of our relationship to and place in the natural world. We will not be able to transform our ecological problems until we transform ourselves and our societies.
Well, I can't agree with
that. It'll be a little bit more apparent what we're doing once I say the next piece. Yes, we do need to be more careful and intelligent about our relationship to nature, but we don't need some profound change in our worldview or philosophy to see what is wrong and take action. We can correct our ecologically harmful behavior by using better technologies, by updating our economic theories, and by passing laws with incentives to reduce environmental degradation.
So we follow you, right?
If you follow me to the degree that you agree with that.
And the we
is
the society.
Whatever the we. So I'll read that one again.
Please.
Yes, we do need to be more careful and intelligent about our relationship to nature, but we don't need some profound change in our worldview or philosophy to see what is wrong and take action. We can correct our ecologically harmful behavior by using better technologies, by updating our economic theories, and by passing laws with incentives to reduce environmental degradation.
That's a false dichotomy, but I'll
go.
This may drive me farther this way.
Sure, you're coming back over to the popular
side. All right, so this camp says, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we shouldn't take action where we can, but even those actions will inevitably be flawed until we change some of our basic assumptions about our relationship to the world. For example, we need to get rid of our false notions that neatly separate mind from body, subject from object, and human nature from the rest of nature. We need to cast off our myth of independence and accept our true interdependence with all other forms of life.
One more time.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't take action where we can, but even those actions will inevitably be flawed until we change some of our basic assumptions about our relationship to the world. For example, we need to get rid of our false notions that neatly separate mind from body, subject from object, and human nature from the rest of nature. We need to cast off our myth of independence and accept our true interdependence with all other forms of life. This camp says, it is true that our narrow anthropocentric perspective has caused enormous harm. We are deeply indebted to people like you who stress the interdependence of all forms of life. I think we are beginning to understand how we as human beings are dependent on other forms of life and how we need to take care of them in order for all of us to live. We need to be better stewards of the earth. And so that's, yeah, to the degree that you agree with that. Because that's also keeping in mind the others.
Yeah, it's still related to what you had said before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of interdependence, lack of human excellence, or human exceptionalism on that side, and this is the stewardship Genesis kind of narrative saying that we've got to take care of things because we have the ability to. Excuse me, but your stewardship model assumes precisely the paternalistic attitude that we need to reject and avoid. It flows out of a patriarchal and hierarchical mindset that always has someone or something on top, or somebody or something else managing and controlling things for the good of those underneath. Historically, that has meant men in charge of women, one race in charge of another, owners in charge of workers. I think that this attitude is the underlying root of not only the eco crisis, but also of racism, sexism, and class exploitation. Until we demolish this foundation of patriarchy, all our efforts will only exacerbate the eco crisis. My mentor wrote this during his PhD stuff, and he uses base words. We revised these, and so they're a lot simpler and more accessible.
You revise them so they're simpler? Sorry.
This camp says, whoa, that was a fast jump from stewardship to patriarchy. We have to be realistic about what we can change. We don't have a lot of time for deep philosophical introspection in creating a whole new culture. Unless we act quickly and wisely in the next 10 to 20 years, the ecological systems that support life on Earth may collapse. We don't have the luxury to spend much time reflecting on why we are in this mess. We need to direct our energies toward how we can get out of it. For better or for worse, given the enormity of the problems that face us, this means working within the system we already have in place and using the technology and political power already available to us.
Yeah, that's part of stoicism. By two light and light is bad.
I think things have shaken out pretty well.
I don't know, it looks like we're bunching.
Yeah. Everyone agrees that we have to act now, immediately, but working within the system is no answer because the system itself is the problem. It's what has caused our current problems. We might be able to limit some of the damage in the short term by working within the system, but the only effective long-term solution will require a total transformation of both the system and the culture that supports it.
You want to build communities.
Yeah, exactly. interesting to see the self-selection of this group, because in a college setting, even with the Holden people who came for J-term, there was a spectrum that we had people over here. Mm-hmm. That might play double advocate a little bit.
We can't help but they're wrong.
Anyway, the last one is, you want to think our way into a new way of acting, but I think we need to act our way into a new way of thinking. Utopian thinking will get us nowhere. Reform of the system is possible. Just look at the significant accomplishments of environmental legislation in the U.S. over the last 30 years. Within the success of the Montreal Protocol to limit the emissions of chlorofluorocarbons, transformation of human beings and social systems takes one place one step at a time. That one's more. So the two perspectives here, that's critical ecology and is ecological reform. They're kind of outdated terms, but more, there's some, I think of Larry Rasmussen, kind of in his work on talking about there are very good Christian resources that you just kind of need to refine again. Is kind of looking at the Bible and scripture and church communities through a different lens. And everything's there. Everything we need is already there. We don't have to become something we're not. That we have the tools necessary. We just have to reimagine the tools. And then that one's, I mean, I do think that Larry's probably technically closer over there, but. So, you want to talk about why people are standing in? Because it looks like we have a little bit of a spectrum, at least.
So what you just described is over there.
It's. I think over there, the whole thing with critical and deep ecology is that you actually like take out what you don't think is working. Those tools are no longer necessary, and actually should get rid of them, not just allow them to be, but actually get rid of them. So patriarchy is not working. So we should actually just get completely rid of it, not just let patriarchy kind of work in places, but completely reform the system so that patriarchy can exist. And over here would say, we could do patriarchy better.
So, what I think a problem with being over here can be, I mean, there's problems all along the spectrum, mm-hmm. But a problem over here is some of the changes that a lot of us think are necessary are monumental on a human scale, and sometimes that causes inaction.
Yeah.
Just because you're driving and what do you think the solution, is not necessarily available to you at the time. So I think this is sort of why gravitating a little bit to the side of the far end seems better for me. Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of the questions I've been thinking about with writing that piece, as well as throughout this week, and then especially as it relates to the case today, to kind of bring Bonhoeffer into this. His starting point of theology is community, being an individual within community and not losing your individuality, and then having that community in conversations with other communities, but being firmly situated within a community. And this, at the center of that community, for Bonhoeffer at least, is Christ, who is doing God's work in the world today. And so he talks about the redemptive work that Christ is doing. And so I think one of the questions I'd like to continue to ask in this class is, Holden is a community, and there are some redemptive qualities of Holden. Sometimes we forget them, that give us kind of hope and kind of a direction. So, Peg, I think I was as you were talking, I was curious about, because sometimes you do get that, and I think this is where I like Bonhoeffer, is that you you have a community, and then you don't have to worry about process by analysis, because that's what that is. It's trying to figure out, as one dude in this huge society, without, when you don't take community into account, what am I supposed to do with patriarchy here? It's just this huge system. So I'm just curious, what about the Holden community prepares you to then take what we're talking about here out?
Sort of reflecting on Peter's thing, it's almost like you reach a point when you move this direction where you really have to go all the way to that end point, you reach a tipping point where you fall to the extreme. Being a dancing rabbit community who are attempting to live on a tenth of the average carbon production that live a North American lifestyle. And that it's like you can't be, you know, between about here and dancing rabbit, you really can't be because you're involved in something else. So you can be at that far end if you have that community, that place, that support that you can really do it. So there's a spot where you just can't be, because really if you want to be in the world, you got to be somewhere like this, right?
Yeah, so kind of in that vein, it's like, to what extent is that far side reminiscent of the escapist dualistic mentality that we're trying to combat? How much do you actually have to be within the system with that mentality to be able to enact change? How much can Holden be an escape?
Well, that's a telling word, but I'm not sure Holden is an escape. That it is for some.
Yeah.
At times, and then can
get.
I think there's not enough political options in setting up one or the other. And if you took a look at the holistic thing that's going on, we all experience it differently. So like it's the choices, the forced choice is the time, the quality of the two choices.
Mm-hmm.
But there's parts of both those choices that keep you from being able to embrace them totally. It's not just whether some paternalistic ongoing system's going to do this or some great mutual hugging society's going to do it either.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that becomes part of the problem.
Yeah.
And that political framework that the question is set up in making the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, I think it's, for me, it's much more complex.
And I found myself kind of jumping back and forth between there and there. Because I think that's my goal.
Yeah.
But I feel like I need some of the tools spoken over here to do it. Kind of like you were saying, like you can't, unless you're really going to go out, you're part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
So like even though that's my goal to get rid of all of it, like I don't have a choice that I'm part of the system. Like I don't have a choice that I have white privilege. I don't have a choice about a lot of things. So because I don't have a choice, I feel like I have to be in this side of it to get anything done. Even though making, kind of what you're saying, like making the current system better is not my end goal. So that's kind of where I find myself.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about how you said, how can we change Holden, or from Holden to our down the mountain lives and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess personally for me, I'm not even, all the paternalism, whatever, I can study that, whatever, so I'm like not even there with you guys, but more on a, like, I've been living in apartments for the last like 3 years, and I cannot believe how many people don't recycle. And I don't know if this is totally off, whatever, but I'm like, all I can really do is do my part, and just live as simply as a United States citizen can, but I think it is really hard. I tried to do the let it mellow, or if it's yellow, let it mellow when I was in college, when I left here, and people like freaked out in my college dorm. And, and then just going to like concerts and stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at all this like waste, and I guess as I've gotten older, I'm like, I can do my part. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much.
So you started to compost and nobody else contributed.
I used to do that, throw it out in the woods, and now I'm kind of like, wow, I live in an apartment, it doesn't So, but I, what you were saying, I moved way over here because you said, like, enforce laws or something, and I'm like, I don't really like that, you know, like, we would have to have a law, like, everybody has to compost or whatever. But yet, at the same time, when I was in Korea, like, nobody had a dryer. It just, you know, for various reasons. And I was like, if that's kind of, you know, they make the dryers here, they're like $20,000 or, you know, whatever, people will not buy them. And so that's why I moved way over. So I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I like all these laws, but yet that's what we'll do it. If gas is $10 a gallon, people are not going to drive so much. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. It'll work.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about that for just a second, because I do think sometimes laws seem monumental and policy can be really can get pessimistic when you get in DC and you're just like, there are too many more forces that I can't do anything. But what laws are now invisible that were enacted that were difficult at the time? So like, I'm thinking of like seatbelts and NHL helmets. Because back in the day, like, wearing a helmet in the NHL was voluntary, but nobody did it because you can't see it, you don't have the motion, and it was also a status symbol because you had hockey hair and you want people to see it. And so they actually made it compulsory now that you have to wear a helmet in the NHL and also seatbelts too.
Smoking in hospitals and airplanes.
Yeah, or even back when I was a kid, I mean, thought nothing about wrappers going out the window, right? I mean, it wasn't until there was that whole movement. It's like, well, wait a minute, you just can't throw your trash out of the car. And that was like a common thing until that whole campaign started to like, no, you don't do that. You just don't do that. So like that whole behavior change and affect the whole community. Like, okay, you've got to the point you can't even think about that, right?
Yeah.
Of tossing anything out of the window.
You don't want a $500 fine either.
Right.
Well, you make moral judgments about people that still do it.
Yeah.
They're really rotten people.
Do you run them down with your car?
yeah, they're fair. No, I didn't go that far.
I guess it reminds me a little bit of parenting, because not that I'm a parent yet, but like kind of enforcing rules and laws to your kids about teaching them about how to be in the world versus educating. I mean, I'm not saying that they are opposite, but just I think what I am interested about in being over here is saying, like, I don't know, what is the lasting, like, when you are educated and have gone through your own experience, and I think that's why community can play such an amazing role, because you actually see, oh, I left my garbage there, and now this is, like, I see that, and I'm impacted by that, or, you know, those, and that's, like, just a really amazing system to be a part of, because you can really directly see how everyone is affecting each other. And I just feel like it's so hard for like, just to speak for myself, it's really hard to think about the ways that you are affecting other people that you can't see. Like, no matter how much you want to do that, like, until you experience it, until you, like, and I don't know what the solution is with that, but what feels hard about when we say, okay, we just need to make a bunch of rules and regulation, we need to just take action right now, like, who stands there and says what those rules are, whose best interests are in mind with all those, you know, it's just, and yeah, so I feel the pull of, like, yes, taking action and doing things when you can in the moment, like, it does feel scary to just sit and be like, but also maybe in our sitting and being like, how can we do a huge thing about, like, even living in Seattle, it's like so easy for me to not know my neighbors, to like not, you know, just like, what if our push, like, was build community everywhere, like, everyone, and this is why it's
cool, and like what would come out of that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so.
So in your community, there's visibility and accountability.
Yes. Yeah.
Transparency is the hot new word, or not new, the big new word.
Yeah. And conversation, like just really, what were you talking about today? Yeah. Really listening, like if someone's throwing trash or whatever, it's like gives you that opportunity to be like, hi. So when you throw your trash over here, it smells and it does this, like, and you open that space where then two people wanna create some type of solution together. Versus just being like, if you throw trash on my yard one more time, you know, and it's like a closed down system.
There's a process too. When you do it that way, it's judgment, and our reaction to judgment is usually, well, who you are,
right.
Or even more so. But then when somebody says something to you, and you know they're within a community or some sense of caring, that takes it way back several notches. You still may not like hearing it, but you react differently. So in the church, they use the theological language, when we admonish one another, you can't admonish someone who doesn't have a positive relationship with you, because then it's judgment. But how do you establish that?
But we really are stuck again. Who would you rather have in the world? Me, who flies to Boston to visit my grandkids, or my neighbor who throws candy wrappers out the window but doesn't fly on airplanes?
Right.
If you think about it, I'm probably doing a lot.
Yeah, but it got you out of town, and if you're an irritant, that's probably okay.
Yeah, what I'm doing is completely socially acceptable, and nobody sees it.
Yeah.
So that plays out the laws too. Because the litter, I mean, now that it's a law, it's just like, it's like morally repugnant. Why would you
do that?
Yeah. And kind of the seatbelts too, it's just kind of like, in high school, we have friends who thought they were too cool to wear seatbelts, and you're just like, I want to be cool. But you just get your other friends who just say like, yeah, just maybe not a moral question, but definitely not in a comfortable situation. I think maybe another example that I'm thinking of, like with the law versus deep ecology, is like CAFE standards, which are mileage standards for cars. The Obama administration is the first one since like 89 to actually get mileage standards ramped up. And it's interesting because it's actually an executive action. It's not, doesn't have to go through Congress for approval. And so now by 2020, we're gonna be back up with the mileage standards of Europe and China, at least, not Japan, because they kick everybody. But
they all cheat. Now we're finding that out.
Yeah.
Last year.
What about things like social things though, like patriarchy, for example? Yeah. Like, if we were to just make a rule that says what men aren't allowed to be in charge, like, or something, you know, and just, but that's one to me that's really like the healing in that. Comes from having a relationship with a woman and a man, or whatever that dynamic is with races, like to just make, but at the same time, I mean, when social, you know, that we needed to make a law that desegregated schools, like that was really important, and that was something that just needed to be taken action. But then if you look out in the world, that issue still, like where that emotional piece is really what I think makes the lasting impact with people. When you know someone and you're able to communicate with them, like, hey, this is hurting me, can we have a conversation about this? And when it's just a rule, and yeah, as a white female, like, I feel like also being pushed out of the conversation, like, you, and for white men as well, like, you've had too much, now it's time for someone else to have, you know, it's like, that also, it doesn't feel like a conversation and a connection, but at the same time, we have our, like what we were just saying, our blind spots and our, you know, I walk through life and don't have the same challenges, but does that mean that I have to be, you know, or men have to get their power taken away from them in order for, like, it doesn't, it feels way more complex than that, and it's going to be more unique in each situation, and I feel like that requires.
That's something the law would have a hard time really changing. You know, for example, like racism or something, you know, if you tried to balance the scales with the law, that can sometimes push people out that might be more qualified, say, in a job situation, you know. If one person's more qualified, but they're like, well, we have a quota that we need to fill to show that we're completely, you know, balanced out. Like, the law doesn't really, that's not really fixing.
Yeah, and that's what we're struggling with right now.
Yeah.
Because you do have the de facto of the law, but you have the de jure that's the law, but the de facto is not, have you changed my heart yet?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things right now going on that we think we have and we haven't. There's a lot of people disgruntled, mm-hmm. and that's part of the political scene today. There's a lot of unhappy people, but they don't know. So the power and the gender thing is hard, because if you use power to try to change it, you fail already.
You're doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's a reversal.
So laws can give false impressions that we've actually made a change.
Well, that kind of complicates it too, yeah.
Good point.
Also, I don't think laws address systemic racism or systemic sexism, which I think is kind of what you were touching at. It's not so much like, let's have a quota and a law to make sure that people, the right sort of people are in power, so it's like, why aren't these people in power? What's keeping these people from having the right qualifications?
So how about like the gay marriage? I mean, that's kind of, that's now a law, and I think, it sounds like there's some laws that are better than others in terms of affirmative action in quotas and places that you're not hiring the most qualified candidate. But you do get people now, because of the gay marriage that passed, who can now be with their partners under that beds. Or like, I mean, there's some major things that law actually did change in a very positive manner.
But that was a correction. That was a historical mistake that we got rid of, as opposed to imposing that, oh yes, now you can get married, when it really should have been, you can get married all along. So that's kind of
Well, so what? Different. I mean, with segregation, though, it's right that like Georgia, they had to actually tell this school that you have to desegregate. Like, that should have happened in '64, but it didn't.
And gay marriage has given gay people the right that straight people have always had, but that doesn't necessarily, that law doesn't change gay people in the eyes of society necessarily. That just gives them an ability to get married. Doesn't mean that dramatically lessens like hate crimes or prejudice.
The laws change, but the culture hasn't voted.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a process over the next year, so it may take a long time.
I agree that that's kind of the common narrative, but again, like, go back to rappers. I mean, this is, when you change the law, there is this tension between attitude and behavior.
Yeah.
That certainly I'm not arguing for just to implement a law and people will change, but they do play off of each other, because when you look at like the Boundary Waters, that there's this great book, I think it's called Troubled Waters, that goes over the history of how the Boundary Waters came to be, because it represents, it's a huge copper mine. Like, we know how big of a deal mining copper can
we
be.
We know what copper mines can
yeah.
be.
Yeah. And it, there was a big fight, and you needed that kind of attitude to make sure that they set apart the Boundary Waters, but then now we have the Boundary Waters, and it's not going anywhere, because people have gotten this kind of attitude because of the laws that set places like that aside. And now they're looking to actually kind of mine on the fringes of the Boundary Waters.
I suspect this whole question is sort of like a chicken and egg scenario, right?
Where it's
like,
yeah.
They feed off of each other, and certainly it can pendulum back and forth, but a really important thing to understand is, like, you make political headway and you get some laws enacted that can inform social ideas and cultural ideas that then inform.
Yeah. I think this discussion is a great example of that, the fact that there is a spectrum, and that it is not a duality of sometimes I'm here, sometimes I'm there, there's a spectrum, but they do play off of each other really well.
The argument that I've heard for not, or the reason that maybe passing this law that made it legal for people of the same gender to get married is because then straight people will think that the battle is over and that things are okay now. And when in reality, the people that often get like hate crimes or get murdered or people on like trans people or queer people, like, and how if you are straight, you're not paying attention to that, you're not seeing that, and that's not in the news. And so how, I don't know, it's sort of like, it sort of could be this, not masquerade, not, maybe though, of this like, okay, everything's fine now, when in reality, there's still tons of issues underneath, kind of like just still there. It's like kind of putting a patch over something. Something that's really, it's like a wonderful good thing, but also that's not the whole story.
But was it before the law anyway? Maybe those hate crimes and everything like that.
Right.
Like, was much attention focused to them on them before? That would be my only question in that, like, unless the hate crimes increased because people are more accepting to get married or something.
Yeah, my take on that is that there was a real effort, but it was done not necessarily just legally, but it was a combination. But changing the shift of seeing gay people as dangerous people and abnormal behavioral people, we start saying, hey, we just want to be a couple and we want to be able to raise a child. And that image over a really pretty succinct amount of time, within, I'd say less than 5 years, if not even less than that, I think that changed the whole debate. And so as people's decisions were shifting, then the law kind of caught up with that. But I still think the more foundational question, a lot of people are wondering, what does it mean? It's like any diversity question. If you're the only one on the street that's of that brand, people may wonder about you. Why are you the only one out there with that? So a lot of that, before people are totally comfortable, I don't know if the culture has finished voting on that. In fact, I'm pretty sure it hasn't. And so that energy still needs to allow the community to talk about it, to figure out, can we live with this or can't we? It's, but there's a lot of it going on in our lives.
And I feel like that, the relational experience is what's really gonna make someone stand up, you know, like when it's your friend who something is about to happen, like you don't stand by as like, oh, that's more like, I see that and I shouldn't, it's like, oh my gosh, my person who I have this relationship with is like getting, you know, harassed or what up, like I feel like the call to action is just a lot stronger because we are relational beings. And once we, and I think it's really easy to create others, like create someone or someone appears as different than us, and so it's really easy to project whatever other is onto that, and it's scary and unknown and whatever, and through actually building a relationship with as many different people as we can, or as is feasible in a community, I feel like it just, something in us responds.
In the 60s, the fact that they were able to film the atrocities in the South made a huge impression on a lot of white people. I think this Ferguson issue about a year and a half ago now made a huge impression on me, but I've had other people tell me, because half of the, or more of the people who are protesting were not black. And all of a sudden, part of that stepping forward said, maybe I got to think about this. And I think that's where this change of heart starts to happen, when you say, no, if somebody's trying to burn my neighbor's house down, I'll go try to help my neighbor. Even if he's not culturally acceptable to me in every ilk. But you have to have, again, that some relationship that drives you to say, I can't just let them suffer. And maybe that's where finally we're going to get with ecology, if we want to look at that, improving it, is saying, it does matter to me. It does matter to my kids. I mean, maybe I would be doing advertising saying, you want your grandchildren to have to wear gas masks when they go outside to play. Maybe that would be a really cool 90-second ad.
Yeah, we are driven by experience. I mean, you could just point to like a really simplistic, but a good example is like the classic, as a kid, your parents are like, don't touch the stove, it's hot. But until you like get burned, then you're like, whoa, okay, definitely don't want to touch that anymore. And I was just told like 30 times.
Yeah.
But it's because now you actually have that experience and like can relate to that and be like, that's definitely hot and I don't like to touch that. And I think that's a problem with the, when you're talking about the ecology and nature, because there's a shift away from nature and it's getting, I think it's harder for people to care about it. When you're living in a city, you don't get that experience. You don't get to go outside and see these, you know, the animals, the trees, the grass, everything, and really appreciate what that's like and what that does for you. And there has been now like a counter push against that, but it's still tough. Like so many people, and then now especially if it's like if you have to drive 2 hours to get a relationship with nature, like where does that put you? Like
so.
But don't tell your kid to touch the stove because that destroys trust.
Yeah,
so it's a bigger question.
Yeah. So I definitely agree, and about experience is fundamental to how you in the world, but. Islamophobia is rampant in this country, and less than 1% of our population is Muslim. So are we going to wait until every American knows a Muslim before we can act in a concerted manner and not ban all Muslims from coming to this country?
Could I throw something in? You know, you were just talking about experiencing like the heat of an oven and or stovetop, and now I'm going to change. And we are experiencing that obvious ecological imbalance, and it's kind of like a Mack truck. But how about, you know, like, what is the difference between us and the Aboriginal First Nations, First Peoples, really around the world, who lived in balance and harmony with nature? Where, you know, as the stories go and the information comes to us, you know, let's say the Cherokee, you know, took down a buffalo, but it wasn't like the whites coming through Canada and just mowing them down.
It wasn't sport.
It wasn't an object. This thing had a spirit, and I thank the spirit for the life it's not going to give me. What is our culture? What is unique about our culture? North American, European, Northern European, call it what you will, that has brought this thing, this attitude to the world where we can live out of balance with nature and it's okay, and we see the difference, like it's coming at us, and well, maybe if I do this, it'll slow down.
Christianity is basically
right? Well, so to answer my question, talking to the native peoples, there is a spirituality. There is a link with a spirituality where that buffalo is not an object. It has a spirit, it's part of creation, and I thank the creator for it. Blah, blah, blah. This concept of a link to the root system, a link to the spirituality where I'm not the last thing, you know, the most important thing on this earth.
Well, you have to be careful though, because there was stuff going on in Asia and the Aztecs and the ancient cultures that were just as bad as stuff today. So you can't just...
Where they have affected the entire Earth's ecology?
Well, I mean, transportation was an issue.
Look at the desert in Africa. Came from desertification of chopping down the forests.
And even on our own continent, there's a big extinction event about 10,000 years ago where the majority of the megafauna, like saber-tooths and mammoths and things like that, went extinct coincidentally along with the arrival of native peoples to this continent. I mean, even just in like this area, you can look through the bird history, and there's a pretty extensive regime of heavily changing this environment from native tribes that lived in this region. I think a lot of it is more not changing the environment, but the degree to which those cultures have technology which can change the environment. I mean, native populations in North America, if they wanted to change the environment, they just simply couldn't because they don't have the like infrastructure to do so. Whereas Western people who came through here had disease and guns and iron tools and
steel.
Yeah, all, I mean, just all the industrial machinery that can heavily modify
So what you've just said is there is no difference then between the balance that the Aboriginal First Nations folks live within and us.
I don't know.
There's a difference in the balance, but I wouldn't necessarily say that like the disposition to alter one's environment is like Native peoples around the world don't do that.
I think there's tons of backlash that an objective was to give away what you have and return to nothingness, that it's almost the Jubilee year sort of thing. I think that's a radical difference from most everything else, and that's a real curiosity for me as to the culture that was into that.
I think the Jubilee year is a good idea, but if you look at the history, that didn't actually happen. There's no record of leaving the land in Israel fallow for a year every
it's
seven.
It's an idea that no farmer...
That no farmer actually ever followed. Okay. Yeah.
But there certainly is the idea that potlatch folks would build up a lot of stuff and give it all away and have a big party.
I think the main difference is that we don't live within the historical context in which the world has progressed through. Mm-hmm. Like all the lessons that we need are in history, but we don't live with that in mind. We live like just as if the world started with like the dawn of civilization, the dawn of, you know, like, I don't know, 10,000 years ago or whatever. And we act as if we always are coming up with like new innovative answers, whereas like indigenous people have always like stood on the foundation of like what came before them, and we're not so great at doing that.
Well, we generalize to where there were, you know, like there's, you would say today there's good countries and there's bad countries and all over the place, and you make them from a subjective position. But that's always been that. There's good and bad people trying to do stuff. And understanding that takes a lot of energy. That, most people don't work that hard.
I think honoring the spirit of things and really being connected to the process of like, it took a lot to take the buffalo down. It was like a whole like day's worth of work to cut all the pieces and do like, and again, I feel like that's that experience of like, you see how you are there with the animal that was just breathing and is now dead. You are cutting each piece of it and have a way that you're gonna use each piece to honor it, and like, and I don't feel like, I mean, or maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I don't feel like that's necessarily like separate from creating experience. It's just, I think with what you guys are saying about like, the fact is we do have all these tools that separate us from that process. Like, and it does take somewhere like holding or going to the extreme to like, I'll return all the way there. And what, like, is it that we only, like, we can only do that and we can only experience those experiences if we go to that extreme? Or is there a way for us to honor the spirit of things, have experience, like, is it possible with where we are now? Because we can't forget what we have seen, and, like, we can't forget that we have a refrigerator and a, you know, delivery truck and an airplane, like, we know that those are options, so how do we actually...
I think that's the question we have to find a way to answer. Because if the only answer is to come to a place like this, then we're screwed, because everyone can't come to a place like this. And for various reasons. So like, we have to find a way to translate the extreme, or find a way to like live within Lake,
or find some kind of community where we are living, in a sense. Yeah.
But like, we have to find a way to make it work, or else we should just stop talking and go home, because we're gonna have to find a way to do it within the confines. Even if our goal is this extreme, I think we have to find a way to do it. And I think part of it is, you're right, like, we don't see the whole process anymore. We've gotten really, really good at putting the unpleasant parts in other people's backyard. You know, like, I, at home, I don't know where my trash goes. Like, I actually don't know. I couldn't drive you to the landfill. I don't know where it goes. But here, like, you have to know those kinds of things, or else you're gonna run into trouble quickly.
It's be knee high, and then you really have to change.
And so, I think part of it is gonna, like, what? I mean, it wouldn't be hard for me to figure out, I'm sure. Like, that's a small thing, but, like, how big? What if everyone took it, you know, to a new where they landed? Like,
yeah.
Because it's not in my backyard, and I know that.
Yeah.
I know it's not.
Found out where the food is coming from, like,
yeah,
built
you know,
their house, like all the labor that goes into all the things we interact with.
Yeah.
And it'd probably lead to a lot less waste because you would see more like value in everything you touch.
Yeah.
So we can continue having a little bit of discussion, or we can switch to a little exercise and then get into the population consumption case. It's pretty much linked to what we're talking about right here, but it might give us a common vernacular to use.
Exercise.
So I'm hoping that most people read the case. So the way this works is it's called the power dynamics. And we take the characters in the case and as well as the invisible forces and actually put them into kind of like a human sculpture and to put a 3D visualization about how these factors are interacting. So we'll do that in a second. But this book and these, so this is the old book and then this is part of the new book, were written through the lens of the authors are all Lutheran, so they did the ELCA social statement from the early 90s. And out of that statement, they got these four norms of eco-justice. And that's kind of the framework. And then I think, so I'm gonna take four, and then we're gonna put the five of community that we've kind of been exploring this week. So the four are sustainability, sufficiency, participation, and solidarity. And it might give us some common vocabulary to talk about how these power structures interact. So sustainability may be defined as a long-range supply of sufficient resources to meet basic human needs and the preservation of intact natural communities. So pretty self-evident, we know what sustainability means. Sufficiency is related to sustainability, but emphasizes that all forms of life are entitled to share in the goods of creation. So kind of putting sustainability, getting rid of that dualism between humans and creation, saying sustainability for everything. And then participation kind of undergirds all of that, stems from the affirmation of all forms of life and the call to justice. And so this is norms getting at whose voices are not being heard. This is especially important with the power dynamics and questions about patriarchy and capitalism and not in my backyard, whose voices are we silencing? And then the last one is solidarity, which is just kind of taking a step back, looking at all those norms, and then trying to put yourself into those shoes. So sustainability, sufficiency, participation, and solidarity.
So in that sense, solidarity means standing with people who are perhaps struggling more than you are.
Yeah, yep. And so, like, finding out where your food is from and actually going there.
So
finding out where you put your trash.
So we would have a bias to stand with people who are suffering or struggling with that issue. Okay.
So participation aims to see whose voices you should be in solidarity with.
Well, so that implies kind of action back to what they were saying. Did you do something about it? So it's solidarity.
So we're gonna have Greg. So the main characters in this book that we're gonna hopefully, well, actually I think everyone's gonna have to be involved. With Greg, Samira, Sarah, Ingrid, John, Jacob, and Ayn. And for those who didn't read, this case is about, it's a population consumption case. A letter to the editor of a school newspaper was sent in saying, I'm sick and tired of seeing us demonize Americans' consumption when the problem is actually population in developing countries. And so the International Students Association gets a panel together of people from around the world, and Greg's our North American associate who's on the panel. And so that he spends some time talking with his different friends from a missionary from Burkina Faso, Samira, who's from Nigeria. His sister, Ayn, who's actually getting a PhD in China at the time. And then they talk about fertility rates, population consumption. And then at the end of the case, it says what Greg actually has to, so we'd have students actually write a paper on what they would say in their panel remarks. So we're gonna do this power structure. So I need a Greg, who wants to be. All right, Greg. So you're gonna stand up and actually stand like right here. And we're gonna, you're the center of attention.
Oh, man.
So then Samira, who's his friend from Nigeria, is another person in this case. So we need a Samira. All right, Samira. And so then as a class, we talk about where Samira should go. What is her relation of power in comparison to Greg?
Significantly less. She's a woman, and she meets from a different culture.
She's also black.
And she's black.
Yeah, living in Boston.
In Boston?
That's where the case is set.
Boston.
Yeah.
Boston.
So where
would we be across?
Well, we.
Or what, way over there.
just about well, so,
so maybe as a way of comparison, like. Not, they're not on the character list right now, but like Greg's parents and sister would be like right here because they're in like the back of his mind. Like his sister is gonna have four, like just announced her fourth kid, and so she has four kids living in wherever she's living with an American consumption. And so he knows that his parents want him to have a kid or a couple because they want more grandkids. And his sister's saying like, "Well, I've had four kids, you're gonna have some kids." So this is where his parents and sister are gonna go.
So,
relative distance as well as presence.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So maybe somebody does have to be outside.
Well, but it's, but he's also he's in conversation with Samira.
Okay.
Direct conversation.
Yeah.
And she's pushing him on these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
She was the one that asked him to get along, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So also by way of comparison, we often put future generations out in the hall looking in. So that's kind of like they're there, but they don't really have a voice. That's what participation is trying to do.
And is this all relative to Greg's thinking?
Greg's thinking and decision and what forms of power influence how you might be making this decision. All right, so if you, that's where Samira's going to go. We'll just lump his friends from different places into one person. So who wants to be Greg's friends? Because Samira has a larger clip pull.
Well,
so like John grew up in Burkina Faso, but he's white missionary, like a kid of missionary group of missionaries who came back to America to go to college.
That's the friend.
So that's one of the friends. And the other friends are other college students.
All white.
Yep.
It may be more common to his experience.
Yeah, yep. They have a closer relation. But we can also talk about where you might go. Where do you think that we should put Greg's friends?
Probably pretty close to our patrons
again. Yeah.
But he also got your friends, right? That was from, or was it like Samira?
So Ingrid, Samira's from Nigeria. Ingrid is our white woman who blames religions for the go forth and multiply, saying that religion is actually the crux of the problem. John grew up in Burkina Faso, but is now back here.
Well, the problem of grouping them together is that some of them seem to have more of an influence. Like some of them definitely, you seem to resonate a lot more with.
Yeah. We can have them.
Well, you can do the side by side as opposed to ahead and behind kind of thing in the relationship too.
Yeah. So.
And up in the balcony.
His fiance is also on this list. So we'll split up.
We have kids soon too, by the way.
Well, because his fiance Sarah wants to have kids. Like,
yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah. so.
Travis, you're gonna
do so that. Don't stare at me. Hey,
hurry up, we're already late.
Alright, so Megan, you can be. Who did you more resonate with? Really good, John. Samir and John, if you will. I don't know. Maybe it could be Jacob, because he seems to resonate a little bit more with Greg.
Okay.
Caroline, you want to be Ingrid?
Sure.
Our opinionated woman. Who thinks that religion is the one of the issues?
Like one of the chief causes.
One of the chief causes of population growth.
Chief causes of what?
So
be fruitful and multiply.
Go forth and go forth. Fruitful and multiply. That declaration is a crux of the problem. That's one opinion in the case. And then the last character actually present is Ayn, who is Greg's sister, who's getting a doctoral degree in development. And so she is a family member who says that economic growth is not the problem, but rather the solution. That instead of saying we should consume less, we should actually allow a different kind of economic development to bring people out of poverty, because then when you're more educated, you have more food on your table, you actually have fewer kids. So who wants to be Ayn? Yeah, you can. All right, so the sister who is in China.
Oh.
Go up the balcony.
So what other factors? What other factors are we missing here? Like what other power structures are not apparent in? Well, so obviously the parents.
I'd say depth of knowledge. Someone, if Greg's talking about the struggles of people in developing nations and is trying to make an argument, well, Greg doesn't know anything about that because he didn't grow up in that environment. So someone from Burkina Faso would definitely know more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a discussion, if you have relevant experience, that can make a big difference.
How do you view that embodied in a power structure?
Well, I don't know. It depends on the argument. I would probably pull her a little bit closer given the argument.
Okay.
So other power influences that are influencing his choice.
Correct. So Greg at the end of the case has to actually give panel remarks. What other implicit sources or future generations or let me talk about Ayn's argument is that we should actually let and help developing countries with their economic growth, but that comes at a cost that trees are going to be cut down in the rainforest, so they're technically in the power structure, but they're probably not on the forefront, so they're back here, but they're definitely in the mix of the voices that are not heard. Those are the trees. Yeah.
Okay.
So, who wants to be
are his future children?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's there are. Who wants to be his future kids, or future the potentiality for? Well, because we. Sure. All right. Sounds great. So where do you go in relation to this?
Probably low on the ground, without maybe the ability to. I don't know, move around?
So your voice is on the forefront, but your voice is kind of muddled, muffled, because we don't know what it's going to say.
So
So I'm visible to them because they're looking to the future,
yeah,
and knowing that I'm going to be there, but I can't communicate back to them.
Yeah.
Just my like mental presence.
Trying to decide if I should have it now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So where do you want to go? I'll just lower myself a little, right here.
Perfect. I feel like perhaps another thing that frames the argument is just like adding catastrophic events and environment. I don't know, it's like when you think about the urgency to have these conversations, it's like, well, if you have like horrible fire season, or if you have a war breakout because of drought in Syria, then those sorts of conversations come closer and closer together. People are considerably more interested in discussing refugee crisis now than 3 years ago because it wasn't on the forefront.
Yeah.
So that even like pushes this entire conversation into greater urgency, like almost makes those relative distances less significant.
So like the media then?
Yeah.
Kind of
could be like you need a news flash about every 40 seconds,
yeah.
Either is it historic or a
don't have kids, have kids, don't have kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a script for this? I didn't read the case, so I'm really like, what? do they have the conversation or is
no? So the,
oh, okay.
It's kind of just this
okay.
Is an embodiment of
okay.
What Greg might be thinking about at the end of this case after all these conversations with his friends and Samira and considering his potential future kids' opinions. Got the not only do you have the future kids but also the potential future generations on the outside. And then
so like I didn't read the case either, sorry, but think like I placed myself here thinking that so I was given a white male character,
mm-hmm.
Thinking that in relation to him we're the same height because he's probably going to take my opinion in kind of the same level. I felt like this felt like kind of like a power stance, a comfortable stance. You said that our characters agree,
yeah,
so that's kind of my thinking of.
And then
myself, yeah.
Ingrid is actually like perfectly placed right here as like a woman whose ideas are probably not going to be taken as well as someone he agrees with, but in comparison to his fiance, like who is also on the same level, he's probably going to take Sarah's advice more to heart than Ingrid's, especially with someone that he doesn't agree with.
I didn't agree with her either.
It's true, but she has to say.
Yeah. Another interesting idea to think about is like, okay, so you take us out of the conversation. How does that change the dynamic? And the act of taking those out of the conversation is like, it goes back, harkens back a little bit to what we're talking about in the other situation, where it's like, okay, all of a sudden you have a value shift. Women are given more support.
What do you mean taking them out of the conversation?
Well, I mean, I'm curious to think. Maybe I'm getting ahead and starting to divide up what our like, conclusion is. But like now, so we have like the demonstrated power structure. We're thinking about different things, but it's like that power structure can change very quickly.
By who's in the middle?
By who's in the middle, yeah. Right? So if or I would argue even by who these other people are, because if you have someone who is courageous and despite the particular oppressive forces chooses to stand up and have a conversation, like if she were to walk up right in front of him.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think based on we I didn't know if we were taking it straight out of there or taking it like outside context, because so taking using outside context, I can see why she's far away. Using that, I didn't feel that she would have been that far away because
mm-hmm.
He felt even obligated to even talk at this thing because she asked him to.
Yeah.
So she had obviously more, I mean, that doesn't seem like a lot of influence, but she obviously had more influence, and he was having a lot of problems with it, figured out what he, you know, was seeking a lot of help, but he still felt like, I need to go and say something and be there and represent because my friend asked me to.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me he values her opinion. She might be a black woman, so, or, I mean, in that sense, we put her over there because we brought in a lot of outside context, but in terms of, like, if we're going completely off of what Greg was thinking,
yeah.
I didn't see that. I didn't see him being like, oh, there's a black woman trying to talk to me.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was taking in what she was saying just as much as some of the other people.
And an interesting dynamic there too is with your sister in China, who you can assume there's all kinds of communication issues and history and feelings. And so as her criticisms come in, you've got to be doing this filtering thing of, well, that's the dumbest I've ever heard, but gosh, I love her. What a man. She's my sister. We did this together. So all of that part of our who we are factors in as well. But that's hard to get the fine tuning of all of those factors.
And he brought in the context of her major. At the end, he was like, when his conversation with her, he didn't necessarily agree with some of the stuff she was saying. But then at the end, he was like, well, but her degree is, and this is what she's studying. So it's kind of like he ended up putting some more weight on there because he felt like she had more knowledge of that topic. So.
Yeah.
So we're figuring out who has influence. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to decide who has influence, every time you change the subject, it would seem that those with influence would change. Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of this book, is that ethics should be done in community, because mm-hmm. if you just get inside your head and you don't realize who has power, who's positioned where, then you don't give it kind of the full, you don't give it the best go at it. And certainly this is kind of like at every different ethical decision, you're supposed to do something like this. You figure out who has power, whose voices am I not hearing. Is that kind of what you're getting at, Lori?
I'm not sure.
Because I think what this is supposed to do is show you how complex this, even just him thinking about a panel remark, is much more complex than sometimes it's afforded. That if Greg were a different person and didn't really care about these perspectives, then maybe these powers would look differently if he actually didn't care about, if Samir wasn't his friend, then she actually would go further or elsewhere, or if he wasn't getting married soon, the decision would change a lot.
I think it's important to even note that, like, subconsciously in each decision, like, this kind of stuff is going on, and how you're factoring in so many, and every decision there's going to be a lot of influences whether or not you realize it. Like, you know, why are you placing more weight? You know, why am I placing what she's saying above what she's saying when her degree has to do, like, with, you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah.
It even gives greater urgency to personal responsibility when dealing with all these issues. This is like, if you're passionate about making this statement, environmental statement, more inclusive to concepts of feminism, you're inherently going to listen to the women in the circle, and they're going to come closer to the sphere of influence, and that's a decision you make.
Mm-hmm. And to me, this sort of mapping, visual imagery, goes back to what Caroline was saying earlier about the importance of relationships and all this. Because we're not saying Greg stand in the front by yourself, or Greg stand in the front with a book or a computer, everything you can research. It's like, Greg, who do you know, and how does that change? Like, if we were to do this personally, like, who in my life would be around me, and how does knowing certain people change the way I might make decisions about what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. And who do I not know that I should know, or the trees, or like, oh, or future children, or like, who am I not thinking about?
Yeah.
That I can see because we place someone on the floor and named as future generations of the trees.
Yeah.
Well, we, and even our stereotypical notions of what that relationship is are going to vary dramatically, and even over history. I mean, if this was his future wife 300 years ago, he's just looking for breeding material, you know, but now he's looking for someone to share his life with, or I don't know which historical era you want to be in. But you've got all that kind of extraneous stuff that could filter into that as well.
Mm-hmm. Something that I have been thinking about is, you were talking about
Samara is her name, and how she, you had her sort of moving closer. I think the problem with that is, and then you're talking about subconscious of things that you would be potentially thinking and feeling. I think there, the power dynamic between Greg is a white male, a young white male, subconsciously his whole life being told his opinion is more important than her opinion. Even if he is friends with her and likes her and values her, that's still something that's been told to him his whole life and has been told to everybody else in the entire room their whole lives. Mm-hmm. So I think that could also is something that could play in how things are being influenced.
She is still beyond other, I mean, this is another one
yeah.
of my closer friends.
Yeah. And I think to some degree the case is supposed to use Samira as some kind of representative of an educated woman who's going back to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of the externalities out of sight, out of mind, where after like the year is done, Samira's gonna go back to Nigeria and Greg's still gonna have to figure out what he wants to do with this decision. Mm-hmm. And still gonna have his friends at Topwood. Mm-hmm. And so her voice is kind of like, it's heard right now, but
will not
not,
be.
Won't be as prevalent. You know? So the purpose of this is to then take this kind of exercise and think about it in your own life. And not just individually, but also like potentially talk about with other people who come from different perspectives.
But this all assumes that there is no word, no idea that has come to us that displaces our ultimate control and influence and ethical behavior. There's no guiding principle or word. You know, did he have some guiding principles or word that was outside his experience, or how about her? Or her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk ethics. Well, ethics comes from someplace. And what is going to draw your ego and attention to a seventh generation? I mean, nobody. Unless there is an outside thing, a root is outside of us, which has communicated, you know, love, serve. Here is the example. You wrap a towel around and you go and you wash the feet. And there are ideas which influence these. You understand that for these witnesses, you understand who I'm pointing to, right? The Virgin Mary or a likeness of and you know, that means we're not the end. We can mull all the fourth session.
Sorry. Yeah. I think that is reminiscent of how you make ethical decisions. In this case, Greg hardly talks about any of those beyond yourself kind of conversations. These are the forces that are at play for Greg.
So these are the forces, the people that are helping him make the
decision. Yeah. And obviously this is different for different people.
Yeah. So it just comes back to the idea that, you know, literally I'm a god. I got the last word. This is about me.
Except it's not because he's taking in all these other perspectives or he's trying.
I mean, he does have to make
But he's going to act as a result of supposedly thinking. He's got the ultimate power and capacity.
Could that force be moving through all of us?
It's certainly
influence?
I'm also curious if having a kid is putting yourself as the ultimate. Because that's his decision at this point is to like, do I talk about having a kid or not in his family lives?
Yeah, am I in control?
Well, that's a huge change in ethic today. Everything from China trying to control its population to the birth rates. It's all over the place. It's going on.
So if you want to read the case, I'll put it out on the table again. I actually helped write it, and I'm the main character. So